Welcome to Paradise in the Pines, a podcast about the people, places, and stories that make this the home of American golf. Brought to you by the Pinehurst Southern Pines Aberdeen Area Convention and Visitors Bureau.
And welcome once again to Paradise in the Pines. I'm Phil Wurz, President and CEO of the Pinehurst Southern Pines Aberdeen Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. We're joined today, and it's a privilege to have you here, Lee Pace. If you don't know Lee, if you're around the Carolinas, you've never heard of Lee Pace, you're under a rock, because Lee, for more than 30 years, has written prolifically about the golf scene in the Sandhills. He's the author of multiple books about the Pinehurst, Pine Needles, Mid-Pines area and golf courses. He's written articles for a variety of magazines, including Golf, Links, Golf Week, Private Clubs, currently contributing a monthly column, the Golf Town Journal, for Pine Straw Magazine, which is produced by the pilot here and David Warrenoff. Lee Pace, welcome to Paradise in the Pines.
Thanks, Phil. I've seen some of your podcasts, and you do a nice job with some really interesting guests. I hope I can hold up my end of the bargain and have something that might be interesting to talk about.
Well, I'm sure you will, and I know you've got some great stories to talk about, and we'll certainly get to those. You're in town this week at the end of July, staying at the Weymouth Center for the Arts and Humanities in residency. How cool is that, and how'd you get the opportunity?
Well, Weymouth Center and the Boyd House has had a writers in residency program for a number of years. And if you're a North Carolina writer and working on a current project, you can make an application to come and stay a week. And it's just a great venue, kind of a getaway just to focus on writing. And it's just a wonderful situation there. And I've stayed there a number of times. David has rented the Weymouth House for out-of-town writers and photographers for the U.S. Open tabs that the pilot has done over the years. So that's how I became familiar with it. And I did a residency 3 years ago, and then was due to come back in the spring of 20. And then COVID hit, and, of course, the house closed down. So I was able to take advantage of an opportunity to come, and so I've got several projects I'm working on. It's great to be in Southern Pines and Pinehurst for a few days.
Now, you mentioned you've stayed there before, and you stayed there and you mentioned David Warrenoff from the pilot. He set up for you guys to stay there at the 2005 U.S. Open, correct? What kind of experience was that like of staying there? I think that was your first time you'd stayed there.
Oh, it was just a wonderful experience. You know, I love history, and I love architecture, and I love ambiance and aesthetics, and the Weymouth Center is very high on all those. And it's kind of like staying in your grandmother's house. It's
right.
You know, 1920s house, and just a lot of terrific architectural detail. And, of course, it's got the North Carolina Literary Hall of Fame in one room there. And so you just go in there, and you just kind of soak in all the spirits of all the great writers who are represented there. So it's a wonderful experience.
And very inspirational, I can imagine, too. And
absolutely,
when you think about everybody that stayed there and the tremendous works that were created, perhaps, while writers were in residency there.
Well, and being a golf writer and a golfer, you know, you're right next door to some open acreage that at one point over a century ago had been a nine-hole golf course.
Really? I did not know that.
So it's really fun just late in the day to go out with a pitching wedge and a few golf balls and just hit some shots around through the rolling hills in the meadow there just to the northeast of the house, I guess.
Okay.
It's to the east of the house.
Yeah, where the Weymouth, near Weymouth Woods. Then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. I did not know that. I have to take out a wedge and a couple of balls if they'll allow me to do that. But in more recent times, you've written this book that's right here in our shot, Good Walks. Really great book. It's formerly known as Good Walks, Rediscovering the Soul of Golf at 18 of the Carolinas' Best Golf Courses. Of course, Pinehurst number 2 is included in that. We actually produced a video, and we did that with yourself and with Tom Pashley, the president of Pinehurst Resort. And just talk about the book. I know you're going to be doing a book signing at Weymouth at the end of July. Talk about the inspiration for the book and why it's so important for us to really consider walking versus riding in a cart.
Well, I'd wanted to do a book on some of the great golf courses in the Carolinas for a number of years, and I was trying to come up with an angle to do it. And it occurred to me about 4 or 5 years or so ago that, you know, I'm a bona fide walker. I will avoid getting in a golf cart at all costs. Here in end of July of 2022, I have been in a golf cart only twice, and that was for a scramble where it was kind of a social event, and it was kind of expected that you know, you not be rude. But even in the heat of the summer, I like to walk and carry my bag. And I thought that there were so many courses in the Carolinas that were particularly from the golden age that were built before or the early part of the 1900s that were shorter and compact and not stretched out for real estate purposes like so many courses
are
today.
Tee boxes real close to the greens.
And courses that in clubs that had a culture of walking of where, you know, 30 to 40, 50% or more of the rounds were on foot, you know, either lugging your bag or taking a push cart or a caddy. And I thought that that would be a nice angle, is just to find 18 clubs and courses that are walkable, have a good story, and have a great walking culture. So that was kind of the genesis of it. And so I set about picking the courses, and most of them are from pre-World War II.
Yeah.
There are two modern-era courses, Eagle Point in Wilmington and Old Chatham outside Durham Chapel Hill, but both of them are not real estate courses. They are golf only. They are very walkable and have strong walking cultures. So that's how the two modern courses got in. So it was a lot of fun to research the book over 2018 and 19 and then write it. And it came out about a year ago, last spring.
And a variety of architects as well, not just Donald Ross, but Fazio, Reese Jones, and both Carolinas. So you get to focus on not just area. I think you have Pinehurst number 2, number 4, Mid Pines. I think Pine Needles is in there. If you would know these more by heart than I would. And you mentioned Old Chatham. I follow you on Twitter, and you play Old Chatham quite a bit, and I've played it as a member of the North Carolina Golf Panel. That is a beautiful piece of property. If you've not had a chance to play it and you get a chance to play, Old Chatham is a great walk.
Just celebrated its 20th anniversary and a very strong walking culture there. There are no home sites there. It is the only golf course I know of that does not have a residential or a commercial building anywhere that is visible on the golf course. Mm-hmm. Eagle Point comes very close to it, but there are some residences along the coast that are not part of Eagle Point, but they are visible on, I think, the 9th, 10th, maybe 11th holes there.
Right.
So, and one of my best stories about a walking golfer came. I mean, one of the things, Phil, that I try to do with each story is find one or two members or regulars at that particular club or course that, like me, sing from the same hymnal,
right,
that they love to walk, avoid golf carts at all costs. And one of the individuals I was able to play with at Old Chatham was Howard Lee, who was former mayor of Chapel Hill in the 1970s. He's been in the North Carolina House of Representatives. He also worked for the Jim Hunt administration in the 1970s and conceived something called the Mountains to the Sea walking trail that now runs many, many miles from the mountains to the coast. And Howard is an avid walker. He is well into his 80s and still walks the golf course, carries his bag on a regular basis. And it was fun just to get out with him and just talk about why he loves to walk and his views on walking and nature and just the subliminal nature of walking a golf course and not having anything artificial or you know, contrived helping you along the way.
Now, you've noticed an increase of people walking, I think, because of COVID. The pandemic really forced a lot of people, a lot of golf courses didn't use golf carts. We actually produced a video on social distancing in golf and the resurgence of golf and so many more people playing and taking up the game and did during COVID. How much did you see an impact of the pandemic increasing not only golf play, but also people walking golf courses?
Well, before we got to the pandemic, Phil, you could definitely see the pendulum swinging back toward walking at a lot of premier resorts around this area in the country. Pinehurst Resort and Country Club is a good example. 20, 30 years ago or so, they, even though they have always had the caddy program for number two, it was very difficult to walk and carry your bag on any of the golf courses. But they, over the last 4 to 5 years, have come full circle. And I think maybe 3 years ago, they opened up their policy that, and for many years, they had a what they called a walking club, but you had to be a member and you could only walk at certain times. And I think it was only on course number two that they allowed walking.
Okay.
But over the last few years, they have opened it up. And now you can be a member or a resort guest. It doesn't matter. You can walk any of their courses at any time. You can carry your own bag. You can take a push cart or you can take a caddy, in addition to, of course, taking a golf cart. And it's the same way at Sea Pines in Hilton Head, yep, where Harbor Town is one of the courses I've featured. It's that way at the Ocean Course at Kiowa. So, in fact, the Ocean Course requires you to walk except for several hours in the middle part of the day during the summer. They will allow you to take a golf cart, for example. If you were teeing off of the Ocean Course right now at, you know, 1:30 on a 90-degree day, yeah, you could take a cart. But you still have to keep the cart on the cart path, and so you spend all day walking back and forth across the fairways.
And that's what I tell people when you play number two or number four. I hear people in the pro shop saying, can I use a cart? And and they get the discussion of it's easier just to walk, because by the time you can't, absolutely, take the golf cart onto the course. So by the time you walk over, get your yardage, go back, get your club, you're going to walk probably twice as far using a golf cart, oddly enough, than you would if you just walked the straight line from to the ball.
Well, and actually, I have cited some stats and some figures from a former caddy at Pinehurst that has done exactly that. They have measured it, you know, with GPS, and it is, you don't save any steps at all by taking a cart and having to walk back and forth. But to get back to your question, yes, the pendulum had been swinging, and the pandemic absolutely accelerated people's desire to walk. And, you know, because right when the pandemic hit, you know, a lot of golf courses closed, and then when they opened back up, said one to a cart. You know, you could not have two people to a cart if you were taking a cart. And the answer to a lot of people was to say, well, I'll just walk.
Right.
And that way I can certainly stay socially distanced from everybody in the group. And a lot of people rediscovered the joy of walking and said, well, I don't need this golf cart. I'll instead get out and I'll walk and schlep my own bag. And a lot of people also learned of you know, some of the mechanized trolleys and pull carts, right, that they have now. The technology is just off the charts with some of the things that, you know, those devices will do to, you know, pull. You don't have to actually pull the cart,
right,
yourself.
Sure.
You know, it is connected by GPS and technology, and it'll, right, follow you on the golf course. And you got to be,
awesome,
careful, because it'll follow you right into a lake or in a sand trap or on a green as well.
Right. You know, one thing, and when reading your book, it's very interesting, because when you ride in a cart, you're breezing along, not really paying attention to the environs, you know, the trees, the birds. Talk about how much you see walking versus riding. Just aesthetically, just aside from the game of golf.
Well, the first thing beyond seeing, it's feeling. I mean, you can, yeah, feel the golf course with your feet, and you can get a feel for the turf and the here in Pinehurst and the sandy loam. You know, it gives a certain firmness and tautness to it. But the playing good golf requires you to bounce in and out of focus. Mm. You know, Tom Watson likes to talk about, you know, he would have a trigger, you know, he would click his fingers or he would flick his belt button, and then he would go into a cool, dark room, or imagine he was going into a cool, dark room and hit a shot. And then as soon as the shot's over, then you pop out of it and you don't focus again until you're ready to hit another shot. So,
right,
you've got several minutes. So you may as well walk it and, you know, just enjoy looking around. Or, you know, if you hit a bad shot, you can kind of mumble under your breath and you can give yourself a good talking to.
Right.
Or if you're playing well, you can just kind of revel in your thoughts. Or, you know, the skies are always, you know, the cloud formations are wonderful. The wildlife is wonderful. You can look at the architecture and try and figure out, well, you know, why did Ross do this? Or why did Rayner do that? Or why,
yeah,
did Fazio, why is he making you do this? And so there's just so much more, and you can decompress. And you also have the opportunity to talk with everybody in your group.
I was going to mention that, because if you're in a cart and I'm riding with you, I'm not going to talk to Joe and Steve.
Exactly.
Except maybe on the tee box,
right,
or maybe on the green a little bit. But
right,
here it gives you an opportunity. If my ball's over here where Joe's is, we can have a little conversation and, you know, and we connect more.
I have noticed that sometimes playing golf with three newcomers, maybe that you haven't played with before, by the end of 18 holes, if you're walking, you will know something about all three of them. You'll know where they're from, or their story, how they got in golf, or what they like about the golf course, or are they a member there, or, you know, how did they get there. If you're riding with somebody, you know the person you're riding with, you know their story, and the other with that, you may forget them,
right,
15 minutes later.
Sure. Lee, if you don't know, graduated from UNC Chapel Hill in 1979. Huge Tar Heel fan. He's got the Tar Heel blue shirt on today. Perhaps coincidental or not, but you've written a lot of books. Obviously, you're from the area. So you've written a lot of books about Pinehurst. We have some of them here. Pinehurst Stories, a couple of volumes of that. The Golden Age of Pinehurst, The Spirit of Pinehurst. Kind of a dumb question, but why the draw? Why the love affair? Why the interest so deeply in the home of American golf in Pinehurst?
Well, Phil, in the late 80s, I had just left. I spent 5 years in the newspaper business and 3 in public relations after graduating from Chapel Hill. And I wanted to just set off on my own and write about golf and things that were interesting to me. And so it was a matter in 1987 when I quit my last full-time job of finding niches and finding places with good stories that had an opportunity for me to create stories. And Lynx Magazine, Golf Week Magazine were two of the ones that were expanding into the Carolinas, and there was some opportunity there. So I just became a guy located in North Carolina that could get to the Carolinas or Virginias and write feature stories on all these new clubs that were coming along in the late 80s. And I got to know Pat Corso, who was the CEO at Pinehurst at the time. I got to know Don Padgett Sr., who was the director of golf. And at this time in the late 80s, they had not yet landed a U.S. Open. They had not yet even landed a PGA Tour event. Mm-hmm. They were trying to dig Pinehurst out of the hole that it had encountered with the banks after the Diamond Head era in the late 70s, early 80s. Bob Dedman bought the resort in 1984, and so they were slowly but surely putting it back together with more money and upgraded facilities and more attention to detail and more advertising. And Pat knew that I had had some experience in publishing and came to me in 1990 and said, we want to do a book on ourselves. We're going to own it. We're going to produce it. We need something that tells our story that we can give to the USGA, to the PGA Tour, to the national media, to the golf industry and say, this is who we are. This is our story.
Right.
And so that was Pinehurst Stories, which was the first book I did that came out in 1991. This was just before the first tour championship that was held here in 91 and 92. Mm-hmm. And when that book was done, Pinehurst had not yet landed its first U.S. Open. That happened in June of 93. It was announced for the 99 U.S. Open. So that book was built around, I thought it might be cool to find 18 people in the world of golf with a good story to tell about Pinehurst and build the book around them.
Yeah.
So I interviewed everybody from Ben Hogan to Sam Snead, Billy Joe Patton, Harvey Ward, Bill Campbell, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and built chapters around all of their experiences at some point over Pinehurst. So that's kind of where it all got started, and the other books have just built on that. You know, we've done one about every 8 to 10 years, just building on the evolution of Pinehurst over the last 30 years.
And you mentioned the 99 U.S. Open. I mean, you're a writer. You couldn't have written a better Hollywood script to have Payne Stewart. I mean, it as Tom Paschal has said, I don't know if I have this correct or not, but he said that was a turning point for the resort. It was when Payne won that 99 U.S. Open, it really changed the course of history for Pinehurst. How much do you remember of that, and how much did it impact you?
Well, it was a memorable week, and in this book, The Spirit of Pinehurst, devote a very in-depth chapter on Payne Stewart winning that in 1999 and how all the dominoes fell for him. It was almost somebody had scripted it for him to be able to win at Pinehurst that year, just from the fact that the resort and the town was a place he was familiar with. He came here in the late 1970s and stayed at the Pinecrest Inn for 4 weeks playing a little mini tour in the area. Number two is a right brain golf course. It's a feel course. It's a it's not a play-by-numbers course, and Payne Stewart was very much of a feel player. So number two fit just perfectly for his game. He was coming out of a long dry spell that had been a result of him chasing money and chasing equipment dollars and getting away from equipment that he didn't feel comfortable with. But by 99, he'd come back to full circle that he was playing with clubs that he liked, with a ball that he liked. He was working with a sports psychologist, Richard Coop from Chapel Hill, was teaching him how to let go of bad shots, to evolve. And he had coming off the 1998 U.S. Open at Olympic Club in San Francisco, where he had a lead going into the final round, and he let it slip away and lost to Lee Jansen, but he handled the loss with a level of maturity and class that Payne was not known for showing earlier in his career. So he was just building up. So many things were coming together, and it all came together in that very magical week in 1999.
And then, of course, we've had U.S. Open subsequent to that. We'll have another one in 2024, then 29, 35, 41, and 47, believe
Good for
it or
you.
Not.
You know those names. I know the first
I told Tom
Fasci
I have those committed to memory. It's interesting because I remember, I'll never forget the day, September 9th, 2020, the USGA announced they were going to build a second headquarters here, Golf House Pinehurst, which is, of course, now had the groundbreaking. They're underway. It'll be ready for the 2024 U.S. Open. I could see you writing a book about the impact of the USGA. What is your impression of that decision? I called it a game changer for this destination. I think it legitimized and validated that this area truly is the home of American golf.
Well, that, and then you add last week the fact that the World Golf Hall of Fame yeah. is coming back, which is a fascinating story to me because it was the idea was good back in the 70s to place the World Golf Hall of Fame here, but it was ill-conceived from an architectural standpoint, from an operations standpoint, from so many respects, and it didn't work. And now we're going to come back and see if it can work here, work again. But to everybody has known that this is the home of American golf, and to have the USGA plant its flag here, as a satellite operation and with so much of what it does will be headquartered here. It's a wonderful tribute to Pinehurst and to the resort and to Bob Dedman's regime. And that's something that you can't overlook is the fact that between the Dedman family with Mr. Dedman Sr. and now mm-hmm. Bob Jr., the Pinehurst has been into the stable hands of the Dedman family since 1984. We're going on, by the time 2024 rolls around, it'll be 40 years.
Yeah.
And that is, do not underestimate the beauty of having this resort in one, the stable, sturdy hands of one family. And at one point, the resort could have been chopped up and sold to a number of different entities and a number of different properties, and it would not be what we know today if that had happened.
And thank goodness for the Dedman family because they keep innovating and improving and looking for what's next. You build the Deuce, and then you build the Pinehurst Brewing Company.
Right.
The Cradle, Thistledew, Pinehurst number 10, hopefully will happen soon. There's so much demand for golf, and I know the golf court, the tee sheets there are full all the time, and we get asked, when is Pinehurst number 10? I think it's no big secret. It's going to be where the pit was located. It's a matter of who is going to be the architect. Some say it might be Cor Crenshaw. I'm not sure if you've heard anything, but I think it would be a huge addition to kind of revitalize that tract of land south of town between the resort in Aberdeen.
Oh, absolutely. When we did this book, The Golden Age of Pinehurst, this book was built around the restoration of number 2 and the job that Cor and Crenshaw mm-hmm. did in 2010 and 2011. And at the time, Pinehurst management was trying to decide if they wanted to pull the trigger on the new. At that time, it was going to be number 9 because they had not yet done the deal to acquire was National. And I remember very clearly one morning in November of 2010 or 11, going out with Ben and Bill, Bob Farron, Don Padgett, I think Tom Pashley may have been there, Toby Cobb, who was Ben and Bill's right-hand man, and walked around the property. And, in fact, we have in this book a diagram of the golf course as it was laid out at that time. Huh. But at the time, Mr. Dedman could not decide yet. The question then was, if we do it, do we want to have it ready for 2014? Which at this point in late 2011, which I think is when this meeting was, it would have been a tough go because you needed to have it open for a year in order for it to grow in. And then they were shortly after that did the deal to acquire National and make that number 9. So at the time they didn't need a 10th golf course. I do know it's at least back on the table, and there are some discussions. And But it would be a wonderful facility if Corin Crenshaw had been able to do it, and in fact, they would still be able to do it.
Yeah, well, looking forward to it, and we need more than one golf course. I think we could probably build four or five more in the area, and still with the demand that we're going to see, especially with the USGA being here and the attention that we're going to get with all the U.S. Opens to come, I think that demand would be there, at least in my opinion. I'd like to ask this of our guests on the podcast, especially ones that are familiar with the area, and obviously you've been here so many times. When you come here, when you come to Pinehurst, aside from the golf, what kind of brings comfort and peace to you? What places do you like to visit? What places do you recommend if a visitor comes here? You know, you really should go to the Tufts Archives or, you know, something that maybe somebody doesn't know something about, or a restaurant that you like.
Well, starting in the village of Pinehurst, which, you know, still looks very much like as I imagine it did 100 years ago, looking at pictures, that the archives is a fascinating repository of a lot of memorabilia and a, you know, mini museum. There in the village, you know, you got to go by Old Sport Gallery and see Tom Stewart and look through all his books and his all the artwork that they have. I love the Villager Deli. I mean, it's just a great place to get a sandwich. There's just so many places, the Holly Inn, the Pinecrest. You know, we had a group from Chapel Hill came down in a month or so ago and stayed three nights at the Pinecrest, and it's just a wonderful experience.
Right.
And had the consummate pork chop there, you know, the best best pork chop in the world of golf. The old recipe from Carl Jackson is a great place. And get over here in Southern Pines, and just great ambiance. You know, the two towns are so complementary and a different look and a different feel. But it's great to get away. And, you know, I've heard so many people talk about driving into the area and their blood pressure just starts to go down you know, once they see the, you know, the pines and the sandy soil. And it's just a wonderful ambiance. And, you know, just get a beverage and sit on the rocking chair of the Carolina Hotel and just watch people go by. It's just a great experience.
Now, as a Tar Heel, we've got to talk a little bit about the Heels. You lived through the era of Dean Smith and Roy Williams, of course, and the rivalry with Duke and Coach K. And then Roy and K are gone. And now it's Hubert Davis and John Shire. Specifically, we could talk football, but, you know, this is Tobacco Road, of course, and this is all about basketball. But, you know, the rivalry between Duke and Carolina is never going to go away. You and I could be coaching those teams. Well, maybe not, but there would still be one heck of a rivalry. What do you think is going to transpire over the years with Hubert and John? And do you see them staying, maybe not as long as Rory and Kay, but, I mean, I think this is going to be going on for quite some time.
Well, there's no doubt that, I mean, I assume and hope they will figure out a way for them to stay in the ACC and keep playing each other, because there's just no telling what's going to happen in this topsy-turvy world right now. I think we can forget about regional and geographic conferences as we've known all of our lives, because I think they're a thing of the past. But I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. I have no idea how it's going to turn out. Certainly Hubert Davis, the last month and the last, you know, since the latter part of February, has proven himself very, very well with the way he managed that team. With the, I think he took an initiative when he took the job of saying, here is the way I want to play. I want to get away from the standard two big man and get more of a wing player, a mobile four guy who can go outside, who can mix it up inside, but can go outside and hit the three. And he went out and got the exact guy in Brady Manek that he wanted for his system.
Yeah.
So I think having a vision, having a system, knowing what he wants to do, and being able to go out and find the right person to execute that, I mean, I think that's one of the first things that you have to take notice of. And then the way he was able to hold everything together, you know, when all hell was breaking loose in the middle of February, and you get hammered at Wake Forest, you lose at home to Pittsburgh, when a lot of people were bailing on the team and the program and the coach at that point, but he was able to steady the ship and you know, I still, you know, 4 months later, I still cannot conceive the enormity of going into Cameron Indoor Stadium with all the odds stacked against them and being able to take a loose but confident team in there and win under those circumstances, and then to beat Duke again in the, you know, in the Final Four. And I don't think there's any question that if Amando Bacot does not go down with the leg injury in the latter part of the national title game, and if Manek doesn't get the concussion, Carolina probably wins the national championship.
You're probably absolutely right about that. And I was at that last game at Cameron, and Carolina could not have played any better the last 8 minutes of that game. They're absolutely phenomenal, and they deserve to win that game. And I'm sure they took great pride in hushing that crowd of crazies in Cameron Indoor Stadium. If you listen to Tar Heel Sports Network, you can hear Lee Pace. Football season's coming up. You wrote a book about Kenan Stadium, Football in the Forest, I think it was called, Life and Times of Kenan Memorial Stadium. Been to numerous games there. It is a very special place. Talk about how special it is to you and how quaint an atmosphere and intimate that is.
Well, I can remember, Phil, when I was in school at Carolina in the late 70s, there was more of a forest around the stadium then than there is now. There's been some encroachment of some buildings close to the facility, but they've still done a nice job with keeping the trees for the most part around the stadium. But I just love to walk past and occasionally sneak into it and just go sit in the upper deck and do some homework or reading. And I just thought, God, there's no place like this in the world, which is one reason I always wanted to do a book on Kenan Stadium. And frankly, it's one reason that drew me toward writing more about football than basketball, because when I launched my freelance career in the late 80s, number one, there was no niche for me to fill with basketball because Dean Smith had already won a national title. The ACC bandwagon was jam-packed. The Carolina bandwagon was jam-packed. And so I thought there might be more of a niche with football. And that came to bear when Mack Brown took the job the first time in 1988. Mm-hmm. I did a profile of him for the Alumni Review and said, this is going to be pretty fun. Yeah, this guy is special. He's going to win a lot of games here. And that was borne out over the next decade. So but in the ambiance, there's no place like playing golf here in Pinehurst, and there's no place like Kenan Stadium on a fall afternoon.
Yeah.
Amid 50, 55,000 people. If it gets into the third quarter of a ACC game, and the noise builds up, and there's a lot of drama. And from the sideline, honestly, sometimes you can't see a lot. You can't tell what's going on, but it's just so much fun to be on the field and be close to the action and get a feel for the pulse of the emotion of the game and the emotion of the team and the coaches. And there's no better spot, and I really enjoy it. And so it's all kind of come together, and that's one reason I wanted to do the book on Kenan Stadium, was just to capture this ambiance that is very special in college football.
Speaking of books, I think the obvious question would be, what's the next book for Lee Pace? Is there another one about Pinehurst coming? What you working on?
Well, this week while I'm doing my residency, I'm going to be working on proofs for a Biltmore Forest book in Asheville, 100-year anniversary book. I'm in the middle of the text for Sawgrass Country Club in Ponte Vedra, 50-year anniversary book, and I'm just getting started on a 100-year anniversary book for Hope Valley Country Club in Durham, which is another vintage Donna Ross course of 1926. Mm-hmm. So I'm at different stages of all those, and absolutely with everything that this book, The Golden Age, came out in 2012, and we updated it in 2014 after the U.S. Open. So we've got 8 years of a lot of neat stuff happening in and around Pinehurst that I think is well worth another book. So I've got a lot of ideas rummaging around and a lot of concepts that hopefully we can put something together and come out with something in time for the 2024 U.S. Open.
Well, awesome. Your latest work, Good Walks by Lee Pace. Lee, where can we pick this up?
Well, right here in Pinehurst, you can get it at Old Sport Gallery in Pinehurst. In Southern Pines, you can get it at the Country Bookstore. And I'll be giving a talk Wednesday night at 5:30 at the Weymouth Center if you'd like to come by and learn more about it. And we'll talk about walking golf.
And one last question as we wrap things up. Where's your next course? Where are you going to be walking next?
Good question. I was just at Alamance Country Club this past weekend.
Okay.
I hadn't been there in a number of years. And it's the 1946 Donna Ross course, and it's just outstanding course. I'd forgotten how good it was. So right now, Old Chatham is shut down until December, so I'm okay. Kind of looking right now. But I'm sure this week I'll get out for some nine-holers late in the day somewhere.
As you know, you are always welcome in the home of American Golf. Lee Pace, appreciate your time.
Thank you.
It's an honor to have you here. Best of luck and have a lot of fun at the Weymouth Center. And we'll see you. We'll get you on again soon when you get some more books published, and we'll do it soon.
Anytime.
Lee Pace here at Paradise in the Pines. If you want to know more about the destination, go to homeofgolf.com. If you want to see this podcast, go to your favorite podcatcher. I usually use Spotify. And for the video of this podcast, vodcast, just go to our YouTube channel, which is Home of American Golf. I'm Phil Wurz from the CVB. For Lee Pace, see you next time in Paradise in the Pines. Thanks, Lee.